This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757, your number. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. In studio to begin is Shauna Banks, council member number two. She is a person who's been an active council person. She's got a T-shirt on, or a regular shirt, actually, that says she's no shrinking magnolia, and I think most of us would agree with that. She is a person who speaks her mind, and we have her here to talk about a few matters in our first segment. Always a pleasure to catch up with council person Shauna Banks. Well, Shauna Banks, we have 12 members of the council. We got 7 Republicans, 5 Democrats, 7 white Republicans, and 5 black Democrats. In a city that has not voted for a mayor from the Republican side of the ledger since the year of 2000, in a city that has not given a plurality of votes to a U.S. Senate candidate of the Republican ranks in quite a while, I think we have to go back to 2010 with David Vitter. In a city that has not voted for a presidential candidate since 2004 from the Republican side, a city slash parish. This is East Baton Rouge Parish, biggest parish in the state. So why in the world would we have a majority Republican council? Why is that happening?
Well, as in every race, the dynamics as it relates to some of the unincorporated areas, that's where we're having some disparities as it relates to voting. For instance, District 1, which encompasses about 20% of Baker, Zachary, Pride, Cheneyville. Now it's about 48 black and 52 white. But because historically that has been an area where Republicans are running, the newer energy of black residents haven't caught on. And I also think that in a lot of those areas, especially Zachary, which school system, quite frankly, right now is the majority of blacks, they have not considered themselves a part of the community enough to seek office. When we looked at the last census, actually District 8 with Denise Amorosa had the greatest increase of both Democratic and white residents. And so that very well next year, some of the possibilities to flip a seat may very well be District 1, maybe District 8 with Denise Amorosa. So District 12 has always been a race that has drawn black candidates, but not necessarily the support. Of course, when Rowdy Goday signed up 4 years ago, he had no competition. And so I think it's just going to be more of a situation where the mindsets of black possible candidates is to see themselves.
All right. Well, in the governor's race 4 years ago, John Bell Edwards in East Baton Rouge Parish got 66% of the votes against Eddie Rasponi, who's homegrown. So it's a Democratic parish, and if we go to the presidential election in the year of 2020, which a listener has asked me to do, and I think I can do that, yeah. Let's go to, this would have been Joe Biden and Donald Trump in East Baton Rouge Parish presidential election from the year of 2020. And once again, I'm going to have to hit one more button to get a national election, but there we go. I think I have it. Biden won in East Baton Rouge Parish, and the margin of victory for Joseph Robinette Biden over Donald Trump, and mind you, Trump carried the state by a huge margin, getting 85% of the white vote, but in East Baton Rouge Parish, it was Biden 56, Trump 42. Wasn't even close.
No.
So is there gerrymandering going on, or is this just the fact that Republicans perhaps are running better campaigns, or a combination?
So as it relates to East Baton Rouge Parish, both in the governor's race and also presidential, it's not so much that they're voting for a candidate, but it's who the opposition is that they're voting. They're not voting for. And so what we found, I believe, in with John Bel Edwards, the very first time, it was definitely a vote against Vitter. In the second term, the fact that he signed the Medicaid bill went a long way for these 4 years. And even now in this race, that is going to make the difference in a governor's race. What is that Democratic candidate going to hang his hat on? I would not say East Baton Rouge Parish for any reason is winning democratically because of the leadership. Our Democratic parish executive committee is not one that is well-versed.
All right. Well, Baton Rouge, East Baton Rouge Parish, is not symbolic of the state. And to give an example, John Bel Edwards, in the year of 2019, he won in East Baton Rouge Parish by 51,000 votes. He won statewide by 40,000 votes. So take out East Baton Rouge Parish. John Bel Edwards would have lost that race by 11,000 votes. So East Baton Rouge Parish made the difference. But somehow, some way, the Metro Council continues to have 7 Republicans and 5 Democrats. And I'm sure there will be continuing efforts to change that. But as we know, old habits die hard. Now, one of the things you've been pushing that gained a lot of traction, even some national attention, is this ban the box concept that you would like to expand to the private sector. Tell us more.
Okay. So in 2018, I introduced to the council a ban the box as it related to East Baton Rouge Parish, city parish employees. It was passed unanimously. But as we continue to do well and make sure that that concept was solidified, this year I introduced an opportunity for ban the box for contractors that for projects that are city parish. So if there's a contractor there, he does not have to implement ban the box on all his projects, even though the state also has required that. But if it's a city parish project, then we're asking to ban the box. And it's really a business move. It's a win-win. We have a community where we have a lack of skilled workers. However, the city and the state is investing lots of money in making sure that we have.
All right. Well, this would bar most contractors who do business with the city parish from asking job applicants about their criminal history until late in the hiring process. And some would say, why not ask them about their criminal history? But does this taint the person so terribly that they don't even have a shot?
That's the mentality. If you're thinking about even in East Baton Rouge Parish, we're talking about 230 years of basically discounting people that are what I call justice involved. That means have a criminal record.
Well, Shauna Banks is with us, Metro Council person, and I know you've been involved also in concerns about crime and about the East Baton Rouge Parish prison. Could you, in a short period, give us some of your thoughts about where we are in those areas?
Well, as it relates to crime, I think a lot of the issues are we're dealing with it more from a response versus the preventive method. And, when I think about City Pair, we're throwing a lot of money at the problem with no real strategy. So it's not getting to those that are needed. And basically, crime now has to be seen as an area where we case manage. As it relates to parish prison, that's a whole nother dynamic. Certainly, the fact that the parish building and the contractors are under the mayor's office, however, the housing and upkeep is under the sheriff needs to be one because that gives the opportunity to each entity to blame the other for the issues. And in the meantime, we have just a lot of problems going on at parish prison.
Well, I mentioned this on the show, and I think sometimes people in public office get too much of the blame and too much of the credit when things go one way or the other. But Murphy Paul has really taken a hit on homicides, which have improved, but we still have one of the highest rates in America, unfortunately, in East Baton Rouge Parish. With Sid Gautreaux, almost gets no criticism. Why does the sheriff get a pass and the chief of police get hit and hit hard?
Because of the fact that Sid Grosro is one of the icons in this community that people actually like. He doesn't really cause any disturbance. Not that, and that is what people in East Baton Rouge basically look at, like and dislike. Are you causing me a problem? But there are problems in East Baton Rouge Parish as it relates not on the crime prevention, but more so the parish prison. And Sheriff, Murphy Powell is an outsider, and the city of Baton Rouge is the issue where most of the crime is happening.
877-217-5757 and talk Louisiana.org. Robin Dow producing, along with Asia Guillard. We'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. Robin Dow is at your service. If you'd like to get in under the wire with Shauna Banks, councilperson for District 2, she is a graduate of Southern Lab, also Bachelor of Science, Southern University in Computer Science, and I believe has a master's degree as well, correct?
Yes.
Yes, from Southern University. So 3 degrees from Southern University and Southern Lab schools. So she is a person who, as I said, is no shrinking magnolia or violet or whatever you want to say, and that's what her shirt says, is she is on the campaign trail for state rep, and that's a topic for another day. She's going after a popular incumbent in Barbara Carpenter, so we'll see how that goes. But a listener notes that she and Cleve Dunn and Gary Chambers have been called the Three Musketeers. Do you take that as a compliment?
I absolutely do. I think we all bring certain strengths to politics and advocacy and social justice. And when you're a politician, you need to have advocacy part of the way you operate. And that's what they brought to me, the ability to actually own advocacy and being a politician or a policymaker. I think it's a great marriage.
Again, 877-217-5757. And as usual, we get more emails than we do phone calls, but you are a person who has been out there in the trenches, and you live in an area that is really high crime. So how do you address the concerns of your constituents who say, when is this going to stop?
So actually, that is a myth. In the Scotlandville Baker community, we actually have one of the lowest crime rates. However, we get a black eye because we are in North Baton
Rouge. Well, go ahead. You make a good point.
Yeah, and so that a part of that is what makes it difficult to do economic development, housing.
I got you.
Yeah.
Does your district sprawl down to areas that are in the hot zone?
Or not, at all.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Well, then, thanks.
I'm very blessed.
Thanks for correcting me. But, of course, you have many people, and if you run for state rep, you're going to have many people who are in those hot zones who seek your help.
Yeah,
what can a public official really do?
So it has, as I always tell people biblically, the anointing starts from the top. So what I found as a council member, that I could have the greatest idea and the greatest vision, but I don't run the budget. I don't make the call as it relates to that. So, for instance, I have certainly ideas that will impact the quality of life of my residents. I'll give you an example. Housing for Heroes is a Scotlandville development that the council unanimously approved in October of 2021, and the mayor has never released the money. Here we are in 23. So you could have the best vision. You could follow all the rules. You could do what you saw other people do, and they are successful. But it is still difficult for disenfranchised communities to get what they need. And what we found with ARPA and COVID is not due to a lack of money. It's due to a lack of mindset.
All right. A listener asks, before we take a call or two, what about Gotro and Murphy Paul? If you had to give them grades, what grades would you give the sheriff and the chief of police?
I would probably give them
Different grades.
They were. I think they're what and what. You know, I think Murphy Paul actually works harder, and he has to as it relates to the crime, because it is happening within the inner city of the city of Baton Rouge. He also walked into a situation where the whole culture had to change, and there's still some renegades that mm-hmm. rebel about that. He has to fight against union representation, bringing in and hiring and recruiting new candidates, because really a bad reputation.
All right, so a grade for Murphy?
So for me, based on what he has had to face, I would say he's an 8.
An 8 out of 10?
8 out of 10.
And Sid?
I would think Sid, it's no comparison, because he has not had the fights that Murphy Paul, he basically gets a pass in grade.
What's a passing grade?
A passing grade is basically when you walk in with an A and you leave with an A.
Okay, so is it a 10 or is it a 6? What's a passing grade for Sid Gautreaux?
It's literally hard to say. And that is because if I would say based on just the area that I deal with, which is Parrish Prison, I would give him a 3 for Parrish Prison.
3? Who?
For Parrish Prison.
Ooh.
Not
hopefully,
for
hopefully,
the
hopefully Sid will come on the show and
well, we've
and
asked him to come
us.
To council.
And another,
on some
another listener notes that last week a caller, Gustavo, chided the chief for living outside the parish. Mm-hmm. But this caller notes, and I think he's right, that the previous chief also lived outside the parish.
Yes. So one of the things that I have actually back in 2016 was to have residency requirements, and the council did not see fit mm-hmm. for that. If we are not making those that as an area for those that work within the city parish and driving cars in and out, then we cannot apply to the chief or the previous chief.
All right. Ray in Prairieville. Ray, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Shauna Banks. Hello, Ray.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call again.
What is your question? Turn your radio down.
I'd like to ask Mrs. Banks what it would take to double the police force in Baton Rouge. Do they have to raise taxes? Do they have money to do it? The way to cut crime is get more cops out on the street.
All right. She wants to double the police force. Is that a practical endeavor, or is that pie in the sky?
It is pie in the sky, because it's still you have to have a method by which you're not only addressing crime, but you're also reducing crime. Otherwise, we're going to continue to have overworked officers who will not spend a career in law enforcement, but it's a means to an end, and they're actually going to get burnt out. So that cannot just be about numbers as it relates to on the street.
All right. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim and Ms. Banks. I'm asking everyone what their stand is on banning the AR-15. It is a policy that our government is failing to do their job.
What about AR-15s? Do you think they should be banned?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And why?
Because those, if you think about the origin, that was for a time where people are actually in war. And the fact that we would allow those kinds of guns to be on our street is basically playing into the fact that we're saying we're having a civil war mm-hmm. or war within our civil society.
A listener notes that somebody close to your neck of the woods, Shalanda Young, was the person who hammered out the debt ceiling agreement for the Biden administration. Garrett Graves got a lot of publicity for handling the other side, but Shalanda, I don't know, at least locally, if she's gotten her just due. Mark Ballard did a nice story, and Mark will be with us tomorrow. But Shauna Banks, we have some untold stories in this community, and quite often, unfortunately, I think it's the minority community that doesn't get the attention it deserves.
That's absolutely true.
And why is that?
I think for the most part, we've become so assimilated. And as it relates to blacks, we have to be responsible for telling our own story, giving our own narrative. And that somehow we have a shame as it relates to doing that. Oftentimes, if you're trying to work or be in a community or a society like Baton Rouge, where you speak up and you taunt black power and black pride, it's intimidating, and you're seen as a troublemaker. But if you think about it, that is why we're losing so many of our young people to other cities in other states, because they are more liberal, they are fair, and really and truly, they're not looking at color. They just want the talent and the work.
All right. Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure to visit with Shauna Banks, councilperson. And next up, it's the Attorney General, Jeffrey Martin Landry, on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And arriving in studio is Jeffrey Martin Landry, the Attorney General for Louisiana. We're 4 months and 6 days away from the October 14th primary. And as of now, of the seven major candidates who have announced for governor, and the qualifying's in a couple of months, but Jeff Landry would have to be viewed at this point as the front runner. And I mentioned on this show that from a resume point of view, he has a resume that's lights out. He's been a farmer, a cop, a military officer. In fact, I think he's both Sergeant and General Landry.
Made the general after leaving the military.
A congressman, an attorney general now for two terms. And he's giving a whirl at the big enchilada. And why do you want this job?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. You know, after spending two terms as the attorney general, and I'm going to tell you, I love this job. This is literally the best job in elected office. It is certainly light years in comparison to when I was in Congress. In fact, I was speaking to a member of Congress actually over the weekend from North Carolina, who talking to him, who's considering running for attorney general of North Carolina. And I'm like, look, it really is. It's a great job. But the one thing that I have learned that in this state, whether for good or for bad, we can argue either particular way, the governor seems to be able to command the most power, the ability to institute change, and so certainly after the second term, and a lot of people wanted me to run 4 years ago, and I resisted that. And then, you know, after Governor Edwards got reelected, a lot of those people came back. I thought maybe Rasponi or Ralph would have been successful in that. Came to me and said, you know, we need you to run. And I was like, I thought about it and said, you know what? Why not? I think we can make a difference. And so that's why we're running.
You are a conservative. You make no bones about it. We live in, I think, what is largely a conservative state. That's evidenced by the fact that Donald Trump won here twice statewide, very convincingly. And you have the support of the former president, who, as we know, is having some issues. But you've not shied away from that support, have you?
No. I think that I respect the voters of this state. I respect them on either end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. But certainly Donald Trump has not once but twice received probably the most votes of anyone on the ballot in Louisiana. He has enjoyed a tremendous amount of popularity and support. And of course, we want the support of those people in Louisiana as well. And so the most important endorsement we will ever have will be for the vote of the voters of the state of Louisiana.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Jeff Landry. And he has some company on the Republican side. There are some prominent candidates, including two state reps and Sharon Hewitt and Richard Nelson, and the state treasurer, John Schroeder, and Stephen Wagespack, who up until recently was the leader of LABI. Bill Huey writes, Garrett Graves has endorsed Wagglesback. This is Huey. He says, I guess the little lunch between Graves and Jeff Landry didn't go so well. You did meet with Garrett Graves when he was considering running, and after that meeting, he's decided not to run, but now he's backing his fellow Jindalite, Stephen Wagglesback. What do you make of this?
Look, it's certainly not surprising. It shouldn't surprise anyone inside politics. Garrett decided not to run, and then Stephen ran. Both of them are very close. Both of them worked together during the Genoa administration. Both of them have worked on the Hill. It's interesting. Neither one of them have held a job in the private sector. But it doesn't matter. I've said all along, Jim, it didn't matter who got in or out of this race. What's interesting is that we got in this race in October of last year. And then when we got in, you realize no one else got in for like 90 days.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, well, I'm going to get in if this one doesn't get in. I want to see what this one does. To me, that's not emblematic. That's not symbolic of wanting to run the state of Louisiana for the people of the state. I was so serious when we had made a decision, my wife and I and supporters had made a decision to run. I'm giving up the seat as Attorney General. I could run again. I'm not term limited, but I gave it up in October. I told the people of the state I would not be seeking re-election as the Attorney General and seeking the office of the governor. Think about everyone else. Are they really serious about wanting to run a state that isn't exactly first in a lot of great metrics? So it doesn't matter. But me. I'll take your endorsement if you want it.
Well, you and Wagglesback, at least indirectly, are going after each other. And I must say, Wagglesback started it. But you came back at him. And your thoughts about this feud that may or may not gain steam, but some fellow Republicans, as you know, are saying, cool it. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I think, of course, that was not surprising to me. Here's the problem that they have. And again, I think a lot of it has to do with the decisions that they've made. The only way that they're able to catch us is they've got to make a better argument for why they should run the state, which that evidently has failed them all. Or they've got to go out there and try to tear me down to their numbers. And that's a problem. That's what the people of the state don't want to see anymore. That's why we got in early. That's why we made the case that this race is not about me. It's about the people of this state who want to see a better state, who deserve a better state, who have seen the only state in the South that is moving people out rather than moving people in. And so it's not surprising that they came after us. And look, I want this race to be about issues. I want to talk about the issues. Okay. And I believe that we or the best candidate in this race to run this state and put it on a trajectory to being great.
All right. Tracy at the Capitol asks about the rape and incest exception that was shot down by the legislature, was supported by Governor Edwards, who is, quote, pro-life. But is that something that you would be in favor of, or are you against rape and incest exceptions when it comes to abortion?
Look, let me tell you something. Right now in this state, over 70% of Louisianians have historically been pro-life. Louisiana has some of the strongest pro-life provisions in our Constitution of any other state. So there's no doubt of where a vast majority of Louisianians across the political spectrum stand. I have always said that I stand by the laws of the state. I think the laws that are on the books are certainly sufficient to be able to address what we need to address in this state in a in a post-Dobbs world. But I'm going to tell you, that's not the most important issue in this state right now. It's not. It's crime. It's crime. It's education. It's our economy. I mean, we can talk about all those other ancillary issues, but guess what? Discussing that issue doesn't do Louisiana any good in moving people out of poverty. It doesn't do anyone any good for in stopping the amount of violence that's going on in some of the most dangerous cities in this country. And so, again, look, I have a record on pro-life stances. We've defended all of the laws.
So you're just pro-life to the nth degree. Is that fair to say?
Well, yeah. I've always stood on my pro-life record, and I've always said that the laws of this state, that I would defend them as the attorney general.
Okay. Minimum wage. It's at $7.25 in Louisiana. It's $11 in Arkansas. Stephen Wagesback has taken credit, as he should, because he led the charge to keep it at $7.25 when he was at LABI. Is that good, or would you be open to an increase?
No, look, I don't like the minimum wage. And I'll tell you, Jim, when I worked on a farm, I made $2, and I think it was either 65 or 35 cents an hour in 1990. I would go back and check it. Okay. What's amazing to me, and you've seen it again and again and again, is that anytime the government injects itself in that kind of way in setting the floor, and as they raise that particular floor, they raise the cost for everyone else. When there was a big oil boom up in the Dakotas, McDonald's was offering people $20 an hour to work at there, and they normally, and I don't know what the minimum wage at that state was. I think the economics of scale will drive the labor rate. And so I have never been a big fan of a minimum wage. I believe.
Okay. That's a point of view that most conservatives share. Okay. Medicaid. Would you continue the Medicaid expansion that Governor Jindal did not take, that Governor Edwards did accept?
Yeah, look, Medicaid expansion is done. That ship has sailed. There's no state that has gone down the road of doing Medicaid expansion and then try to roll it back. What I would like to be known for is how many people we can graduate off of Medicaid into a private paid system rather than how many people we can put on Medicaid. And then I also think that we can do a better job in providing the outcome, because it's great. We got everybody, 50% of the state is on Medicaid. And like, how good is the service that they're getting, Jim? You know what I mean? Like someone told me, said, we got way more people that are having, mammograms. Are we able to actually save them if they're getting cancer? How good are the outcomes for Louisianians when it comes to healthcare?
Jeff Landry's in the house. We do have to take a short break. We do have some folks waiting in line to talk with him. And I would say that if you get on the line, we can only take questions, not comments. So we have about a 15-second limit if you're going to get on the air. And we hope you'll be kind to our guest as always. And this is a guy who speaks his mind. He wants to be governor. Conservative Republican Jeff Landry, the pride of New Iberia. He's back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow and Asia Guillard are producing. 877-217-5757. And Jeff Landry is in the house, and he is running for governor of Louisiana. It's no big surprise. He was out there first and foremost, got the Republican nomination quickly. And you got a lot of grief for that, and so did Lewis Gurvich. Was that fair, or was that just politics on your part and perhaps some resentment on the parts of others that they didn't get the endorsement? We have thoughts about how that process evolved.
Well, look, there's a process. It's been on the books. It's not my job to have someone else read the rule book. But when you play the game according to the rules, I think it's fair and square. I mean, look, every 4 years, the citizens of this state vote, both Democrats and Republicans vote for members to represent them in the party central committees. The Democrats have the same structure as the Republicans do. And we have a system under which if you garner a majority of those who sit on a Republican State Central Committee, that's 230 somewhat odd people. And so we were able to get over 130, 140 names that said, you know what, we want to get behind one candidate. And so, those who complain about it, they just sour grapes. sour grapes. I don't read the rule book. I don't know. You got to get up early, Jim. You know, if you really want to run the state.
You have run what I would say to this point is a masterful campaign, but people say a lot can happen, and it can in 4 months. And as far as the debates, are you going to pick and choose, or will you go everywhere you're invited?
Oh, I don't know. We'll have to see. You know, like you said, we got a lot of time between now and then. I don't take the position that we're in lightly. In fact, it gives me a tremendous mm-hmm. amount of anxiety. It also levels a tremendous amount of weight on our shoulders. I think that we're going to just mm-hmm. keep going out there and talking about the issues and trying to reach as many people as we can and explain to them why this race is not about me, it's about them, and give us the vision for Louisiana that they see.
And we've had issues both in the state and in the federal government of late as far as cracking these debt ceilings. The spending cap in the state yesterday, the legislature voted to do so. And last week in Washington, the president and the Republican majority in the House came together. And your thoughts about whether those were prudent moves? Were they good moves both here and there?
Well, look, I can tell you some 12 years ago as a United States congressman representing Louisiana's 3rd Congressional District, I was faced with that issue and did not vote to raise the debt ceiling, raised a whole bunch of cane about it at the time, fought with way more Republicans than I did Democrats about that particular issue. I think at the time it was like 18 trillion. Mm-hmm. Today we're like at 30 trillion. I mean, when does it stop? And so, you know, I don't know. And then here in Louisiana, you know, the question is, we put in place some restrictions to try to control our spending. Mm-hmm. And then we seem to decide that we want to break that rule for whatever. I don't know. I'll tell you this. This was the position. Certainly, if I would have been a legislator, I would not have voted to break that cap. I don't care what it is. I mean, it couldn't have been a project that important. To Louisiana,
about the federal one.
Well, no, I'm talking about the state. Like in other words, what you heard going on in the legislature. Well, I'm not going to get this project, or if I don't break it again, this. Or then they threaten the deputies, which I am sick and tired of. Right? I mean, these are the kind of politics that go on in Louisiana. We threaten our law enforcement officers mm-hmm. with supplemental pay. Where if we don't break the cap, we're not going to give you mm-hmm. your raise. Well, let me tell you something. The raise should be at the beginning. Okay, when you start the budget, it should start with them, especially when you got 3 cities in the top 10 most dangerous cities in the country, okay? And so what I have said, what I told them, I said, look, any legislator, that this is their budget, and next year we're going to have a new governor, hopefully it's me, and we're going to deal with the budget as it is, and if it's not good, well, then it's their fault. I mean, and if they're there, they're going to have to be a part of the solution. So whatever my quote was, I told Tyler this, is that, look, I would tell him, whatever milk you spill today, you're going to have to clean up tomorrow.
Yeah. And my guess is that you didn't particularly care for the federal move either to raise a debt ceiling.
Well, look, where does it stop? You know, let's just do away with it. Why don't we just spend it until we got it no more? I mean, I don't know, Jim. I mean, look, we have inflation right now that is running rampant. Okay. It affects the poor more than it does the rich.
All right.
And that's a direct relation.
Well, let's take a few callers. Sure. And as I said, please be brief. And when I say brief, in and out in 15 seconds or fewer seconds. Molly, downtown Lafayette. Molly, you're on with General Landry. Good morning. Hi, Molly.
Hi. I have a question about, you talked about crime and somebody mentioned abortion, rape, and incest, but what's your overall thoughts on the rising rate of crime against women, whether it's domestic violence or...
Great question. Let me tell you, if you followed us, and I'd encourage you to go to our website at agjefflandry.com, that's on the official side. Mm-hmm. We have done more. I've got a young lady who has been working with, I've been knowing her for a long time, Monica Taylor, Amanda Larkins, they're part of our outreach. We have been focused on domestic violence since I became the Attorney General. Louisiana, I think, leads the nation in the amount of domestic violence incidents. And I agree. It's something that we have been working. We have held workshops every year trying to bring law enforcement officers, prosecutors, victims' rights coordinators together so that we can do a better job of putting those cases together and bringing justice to those that inflict that kind of violence against women. And so we've got a great record to run on that. It's a great question.
All right. Patrick and Inniswald, please be concise. Patrick, you're on with General Landry.
Hey, do you support vouchers? And
all right. Do you support school vouchers?
Yes. I mean, look, I'm going to tell you something. Our educational system in the state is completely broken. I mean, it really is. And I'm going to tell you, after Hurricane Katrina, one of the things that they did do was they instituted some charter school and voucher programs. And I've spoken to more people who are trapped in failing schools. And those kids have had an opportunity to get out of that system because of a voucher program. Look, my mother was a public school teacher, Jim. She taught in a public school system. She coached women's basketball. I support our teachers. But I'm telling you, we have to start thinking outside of the rigid box that we're in.
All right.
Because our education system is a mess.
A listener asked about lawsuits against the oil and gas industry for damage to the coast.
Yeah, the coastal
suits. Are those appropriate?
Yeah. Are they appropriate? I don't. You have to ask a judge. But
well, you're a lawyer. You're the attorney general.
I'm not the judge.
You're the attorney general.
Look, here's what I tell you. When we got sworn in 8 years ago or 7 years ago, there were 38 or 39 coastal suits. They had started dotting the coastal parishes. As soon as we got elected sworn in, we intervened in those suits, and a lot of the oil and gas folks were very upset about it. And I said, no, I said, we have to get down to the bottom of this issue. And the thing I'm the most proud about is that since that time, you know how many new coastal suits there have been? Zero. They've been none. Because I've told both the industry and the plaintiffs and the parishes, like, look, we either come to some resolution on this or y'all are going to litigate it. It's evident. That the legislature cannot address this issue. In fact, there are some that are in this race that claim they can fix it, but they've been in the legislature longer than I've been attorney general. And yet the law is terrible.
Okay.
So that's where we are.
Dan downtown, Dan Baton Rouge. Dan, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, General Landry, Mr. Engster mentioned your prior service in Congress. So was your apology to President Obama after holding up that sign during the State of the Union speech of your own volition, or
all right. I think that was back in the day. You and the former president crossed swords, but you worked it out, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, look, it's important to set the stage for that. Look, the Macondo incident happened. They had shut down the entire Gulf of Mexico. We had permitting. They had used a one size fits all to shut down the oil and gas industry. People in this state were hurting. They were losing jobs. They were losing businesses. The president would not entertain a meeting with us at all, again and again, and not just me, but the entire delegation. And, you know, look, I think it's important that people understand the importance of what Louisiana does for the rest of the country.
Quickly, will you govern from any particular ideology, or will you govern from the center?
I will govern the way the people in this state want us to govern. I respect the people of this state and the positions that they take. I've gone around the state and tried to get as much input as I can. I listen to both sides, and then we go out there and put out the best policy forward. And here's something important. I'm not going to go out there and institute a policy without letting the people of this state know. In full transparency, okay. This is what we think.
Well, good luck to you. Let's do this
again.
We're running out of time, and we got Billy Nungesser calling in. He's not calling about you, but he's headed to Australia. And quickly, Governor, what's going on in the great country of Australia?
Well, when I first got elected, I went to a conference in Arizona, and I believe it was South Dakota, bragged about all the Australians that go to South Dakota and spend all this money. So when she came off the stage, I asked her, I said, what do you have in South Dakota? She goes, not much, but I go there. They know me. They can trust me. And everybody that travels from Australia uses a travel agent or consultant because it's so far.
We are short on time, but when you get back, let's talk about it. I'd love to hear how it goes. Thank you, Governor. I'm sorry we don't have more time, but appreciate your time as always, my friend. And thanks for listening. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Stay safe and stay tuned.